Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Hello, welcome to Verbatim. I'm Annie Thompson.
When we got to Sydney, the train pulled into Sydney Station and our husbands were there and the photographers were there. Everyone knew I'd arrived because on the evening paper there's a picture of Gordon and I meeting. He welcomes his English bride, you know, and there we are.
That's Ruth Reid, who came to Australia as a British war bride in 1946. Ruth grew up in Wimbledon, London, with a sister and two brothers.
It was a very happy childhood, I suppose, until the war came, and I was 17. Both my brothers went off to the war. Both of them were injured, and so many of our friends were killed and didn't come back. It was a very sad time. I was nursing at that time, and I was thoroughly enjoying it. I was at Hammersmith Hospital, and they had started a new program for 16-year-olds, and that was when I first started it. And I was thoroughly enjoying it. We had to go to the hospital and watch injections, and this rather large lady was having an injection on the bed. And as the doctor injected her, I slid under the bed in a faint. And I can remember they gathered me up and sat me outside the ward. And as the doctor walked past me afterwards, when I'm sitting there feeling very miserable with my head down, he said to me, "And you think you're going to be a nurse?"
So that was the end of your nursing career?
That was the end of my nursing career. But I enjoyed what I did.
Ruth found work in a bank and remained in London for the duration of the war. Her nursing experience didn't go to waste, though, and Ruth was keen to contribute to the war effort.
The first thing I did was do the first aid, so that you knew exactly what to do, because you were living in conditions that you were sleeping in an air raid shelter. Things were happening all the time. People were getting injured and hurt and so on. And then I was doing the fire watch, and you would sit every night and you'd be called and you'd have to go and put out the incendiaries. And that was a very funny time because I was with a young lad. We were paired together for the night watch. And every night he would come with his supper, and it was always dripping sandwiches. He'd bring enough for 10, and I didn't want any of his dripping sandwiches, so I can remember that. But it wasn't all fun, of course. I had a friend, my greatest friend at that time was Doreen. And Doreen and her mother had gone to live in Brighton. And they had said to me as they went, "Come down for a weekend." So I just sort of thought, "Oh, I'll go down this weekend." So down I went. And on the Saturday, Doreen said, "Have to go to work tonight because the Australians who've been here for several weeks getting ready to go to their bases, and we're having a farewell for them." And she said, "It's just cups of tea and coffee." So I said, "Well, I can pour a cup of tea." So off I went. And I know that I was talking to Gordon because he was telling me all about Sydney. Sydney was that's where he came from, of course, and the most marvellous city in the world, and the harbour and this and that and the other. And at the end of the evening, as we went home, he asked for my address. Well, I just gave it to him. Didn't expect to ever hear from him again. And as we were going home in the car, Doreen said, "My friend Gwen has been chasing that chap for weeks, and you come in and just sweep him away." But about 2 days after I got home, I got a letter from him, and it started off, "Dear Gwen." And I thought, I wasn't going to reply, because I thought, why should I reply if he doesn't even remember my name? Anyway, I did. And the next minute, he was on the phone. apologising, of course. And then he came down to see me, and I told him very firmly that I would never leave home to come to Australia, never. Silly things you say before you've thought things through, I suppose.
What was it like, Ruth, conducting this courtship in wartime England?
Well, he, of course, would just come down for the weekend, and then off he'd go back to his base. And, no, it was pretty awful. I began to realise how much he meant to me, because you would hear on the news so many of our Lancaster bombers went out on patrol, and so many are missing, have not returned. And, you know, the death rate and the loss of planes was just terrible. And so every morning I realised it mattered more and more to me that planes had gone down, and was his one of them? And then perhaps that day or the next day he would phone and say, I'm okay. And so you'd sigh with relief, and I began to think, oh, I'm getting a bit too worried about this Australian. It was rather funny because my mother and my father both thought Gordon was absolutely wonderful. And my father, who'd always supported Australia in the cricket, always, we used to call him a traitor. He was saying to me, Ruth, it'd be marvellous if you went, married Gordon and went over there, I'd be able to come out and watch the test matches. No, it took a long time. I hesitated for a long time because I really thought I couldn't leave home. I didn't want to lose my friends and family. But came a time and I thought, oh. So we got engaged and we were married 3 weeks later. So everything was arranged. I wore my sister's wedding dress. We had the reception at a hall, nothing very fancy, but it was a lovely time. And Gordon's pilot, who was another Australian from Hobart, he was our best man, and some of his crew were there, and my friends and family, but none of his family, of course, which was sad. I know we had telegrams from all his family on the day, which was lovely. They were all read out. All these people's names, I didn't know any of them.
That was June 1945. The war in Europe was over, and in October, Gordon returned to Australia. Ruth waited in London until February the following year, when she was allocated a berth to join him.
I always remember when the telegram came to say that at last I had a ship to come out on, and I said to my mother, I'm not going. I can remember that I had a week and the ship was sailing, and I said to my mother, I'm not going. I'm not going to Australia. And she practically had to pack my bags for me. But of course, you know, I did come, but it really was very, very, very hard to leave the family. I'll never forget it. Gordon had made a promise. Gordon had said to my mother, if she's not happy there, then I will bring her home and we'll live here. We all had to meet at the station and go to Liverpool to sail. And our parents were not allowed to come with us. And I said to my mother, I couldn't bear it at the station. So we said goodbye at home. And I can still remember. It was a very painful exercise. But my mother was absolutely confident that we would see one another again. I wasn't, but she was. She knew. She said, Gordon's promised me that he'll bring you back if you're not happy. So. Well, I can remember, as we all had to meet, all these war brides, we got in the train and we arrived at Liverpool. As we were walking across, there was this rather small boat there, and saying, is that it? It wasn't a great big liner. It was a little cargo boat called the Empire Abercorn. And it didn't look at all, you know, illustrious or comfortable or anything else. And I can remember we were all looking at it and saying, goodness me. And as we approached it, hanging over the side were all the crew watching us. And I suppose if we'd thought at all, we would have thought they were looking, saying, what a fine group of Australian girls. What they were saying really was, heaven help us, they're all pregnant. I can remember leaving as we sailed away from the coast, the last look at the coast. I can remember standing there to watch it disappear and feeling, this is terrible. What have I done?
What can you remember about the journey, Ruth? Was it a pleasant experience?
Well, it was because of the people you met, but it was a cargo ship, cargo boat. And so there were no facilities for people. Well, I was seasick for a little while, but only about 2 days, and then I was fine. The doctor said to us when the first food that came, we hadn't seen meals like this for a long time. There were things that we hadn't been able to get in London. And I always remember him looking around and saying, well, you'll all be sick eating like this. You shouldn't be. And we were ignoring him completely and eating and enjoying ourselves. We went to Melbourne. And we were to get the train from Melbourne to Sydney, and our husbands had to meet us in Sydney. They weren't allowed to come to Melbourne. I think it was still wartime trains and so on. So we were met by the Victoria League somewhere and had lunch. And that was marvellous. But suddenly we're all talking and looking around and wondering where we were. And then somebody called out, is there a Mrs. Gordon Reed here? And I put my hand up, and it was Gordon's uncle. And he came in with a huge basket of fruit and a bottle of perfume, 7-Eleven, you know, Yardley 7-Eleven, and to greet me. And I thought, what a welcome.
What were your first impressions of Australia?
Well, we travelled on the night train from Melbourne to Sydney, so what impressions would you get? We sat up all night because we were 24 hours late, so there were no sleepers. We sat up all night and peered out of the windows trying to see where we were. And we didn't see anything, really, you see, until we got to Sydney. When we got to Sydney, the train pulled into Sydney Station and our husbands were there, and the photographers were there. And so everyone knew I'd arrived because on the evening paper, there's a picture of Gordon and I meeting. He welcomes his English bride, you know.
It would have been lovely to see Gordon after so long.
Oh, it was just incredible. It was just incredible. It was marvellous. He'd come home in the October, and this was February, March. And so it was a long time. And I'd grown since he'd seen me. There was much more of me. But it was just wonderful.
This is Verbatim on Radio National with British war bride Ruth Reid.
And then cars, Commonwealth cars, took us to our homes. And I thought we were going to be living in Sydney, this wonderful Sydney that I'd heard so much about. The first person we dropped off was to Redfern. And I said to Gordon, how far have we got to go from here? And I thought, oh dear, I don't like the look of this very much. Gordon's people were living in Hurstville, and they were marvellous. You could not have had a warmer welcome from anybody. They were, all the family were there, and all the neighbours were there, curious as to see, because the last thing Gordon had been told as he left Australia to join the forces, his grandmother had said, and don't come home with one of those English girls. And here he is with one of those English girls. But they were absolutely fantastic. But then, of course, Gordon had already got a job in Parliament House in Canberra, which I didn't know about until I was on the ship. And so we almost immediately had to go to Canberra. And Canberra was the capital of Australia. I mean, there was sheep grazing in the fields, and it was so small. This was 1946. I was married in 45. It was 1946.
It was such a contrast.
Absolute, such a contrast. So different. But Canberra was wonderful in those days because it was small, everybody knew everybody, and it was just a beautiful place. I just loved it.
What things did you miss in those first years coming to live in Australia?
Well, I desperately missed my family. I was not miserable.
But homesick occasionally?
Homesick, no one can tell me anything about homesickness, nobody. I always remember, you know, you didn't get on the phone to people in those days, so I would rely on letters, and letters would come every week. If I didn't get a letter, it was terrible. But I wasn't sitting around, but I had one English girl who came out after I did, who lived a few doors from me, and she was very, very miserable, and she would not settle. And so she used to come down and see me and so on, and we'd go out and walks and so on. And I always remember Gordon, when he came home in the evening, he'd say to me, after we were talking, he said, "I know who's been to see you today." He could tell that somebody's been harping on about homesickness. But the first Christmas, Gordon said to me, "You can phone home." Now, this was a big deal. People would think that was funny now, but it was a big deal to phone. And my mother came onto the phone. I promptly burst into tears, and she promptly burst into tears. And I've been out here since March, and this was December. And so we cried for 3 minutes or whatever I was allowed. And I came off the phone, and Gordon, I thought, that was wonderful. And Gordon said, "You haven't spoken a word. How is she? You wouldn't even know." Looking back later, I could laugh about it.
Let's say goodbye with a smile, dear. Just for a while, dear, we must part.
Soon after the second of Ruth and Gordon's four children was born, Ruth's parents made the journey to Australia to visit the Reeds.
My mother took one look, and I showed her the room that I'd set up for them, and she said, "Well, I can't sleep here." And I said, "Why not?" And she said, "I'm not going to sleep on the ground floor." Mind you, there was no upstairs in this place. And I said, "Well, I don't know what I'm going to do." I said, "Well, I can only put you on the roof." And she said, "But what? I can't." She said, "Look, people can look in." So we had to have blinds and curtains, and I think she got used to the idea, but it was very, I can always remember those first few words in her very English voice, "Ruth, I can't sleep here." And then when she saw the paper being delivered and the letters in the box, and the postman used to blow the whistle to let us know, I'd say, "Oh, there you are, there's mail," you know.
How do you think you were regarded as a war bride? Was there any kind of resentment?
You know, it's only in the recent years that I've heard those sort of comments and people saying, you know, it was a bit off, all these Australians going over and you all grabbing them. But when you arrived and so on, no, not at all. I didn't feel any of that, and there was such warmth. But what did amaze me was that everywhere I was going in Canberra, the people were saying to me, "And how's home? What's going on at home?" And they were all very anxious to know if you'd met the princesses and how the prince, you know, Elizabeth and Margaret, and had you seen them? And I said, "I've only sort of sat in the gutter with my little flag with the school, waving my flag as they came along, but I mean, you know, they weren't my friends." But I remember going home to Gordon and saying one day, "You know, all these people have been to England. It's their home." But it wasn't. It was home because that's how they felt about it. I think all that has changed in the last 50, 60 years, but I am going back a long way.
Over the years, Gordon Reed's academic career had gathered momentum. The family moved to Western Australia in the 60s, where Gordon was appointed inaugural Professor of Politics at UWA. But there was more to come.
He was Professor of Politics, and then he became Deputy Vice-Chancellor. And then he was writing the book that he'd been commissioned to write on the Parliament. And so he had sort of got leave, and that's what he was doing, and writing this. And he was thrilled because that was a sort of something he was really vitally interested in when he was asked to be governor. And I always remember him phoning from Canberra and said, "You better be sitting down when I tell you this." And I said, why? I can take things standing up. I was laughing and I was here. And he said, oh, I've been asked to be governor. And he said, what do you think about that? And I said, well, I think that's a wonderful honour.
Was that an exciting time
that
for you?
That was absolutely tremendous, the most exciting time. I always loved meeting people, but to go right across Western Australia and meet people in every area, in every sort of work, it was just absolutely marvellous. And it was the people that made the job so exciting. It was just incredible, the things that are going on right across the state. And to have the privilege of going there and meeting them all, it was just absolutely wonderful. And all those things have been, they're all tucked away in my memory.
The Reeds had some auspicious guests too in their time at Government House in Perth.
We had the Queen and Prince Philip. The first one we had was Princess Anne, Princess Royal, and we had the Duke of Kent and the Duke of Gloucester and Fergie and Prince Andrew. So, you know, it was a lot of fun.
What was that like for you as an English woman to have the royal family come and stay?
Oh, that was incredible. Yes, I'm afraid, you know, my royalist feeling has come to the fore in this.
Was it ever personally limiting to you, Ruth? Were there things that you would like to have done that maybe you weren't able to because of Gordon's position?
As governor? Well, obviously there were things you had to do, but there was nothing. I didn't ever, maybe it's an attitude you have, but I never felt I was hemmed in. I always felt that I could do things. And this is what amazed me, because I thought that he was governor and I didn't understand the role of the governor's wife. And I really, a governor's wife can take as much or as little part as she likes. I mean, she's not appointed. And I always remember saying to the Premier when I went in to see him with Gordon when it was going to be announced, and I said, but you haven't even thought about me. You don't know what I'm going to be up to. And he said, don't worry, we've had our eye on you. But
and who was so, the Premier?
Oh, the Premier then, of course, was Brian Burke. And, no, it was just an amazing, amazing thing. But I never felt that I couldn't do things. End of our term, after a wonderful term in that vice-regal role, it all ended so tragically and so suddenly because Gordon was suddenly diagnosed with terminal cancer and told he had about 4 months to live. And so he had no time for the closure of a governor's term in the usual way. It was a matter of just looking after him and then he died in the October. And so later on, about 18 months or 2 years, when I was going back, I gathered my strength to go back to England, they let Buckingham Palace know that I was going. And the Queen invited me to go and see her. And I went just all by myself. And the Queen was great. She knew Gordon. She spoke of Gordon and said how sad she was and so on. And that was great. And I told her exactly that I felt as though I was doing this for Gordon, handing back the commission and so on. And so that really, for me, coming back after that experience was just wonderful. I just felt then that it was a closure for me. I felt so now that term is over, that part of your life is finished. And now turn around and get on with things.
And Ruth's got on with plenty of things. She's involved with many organisations, most of them related to children and health. And her family continues to grow. As well as her 4 children, she now has 9 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren. Technical production for Verbatim today was by Ian Manning. I'm Annie Thompson. Thanks for your company.
Listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online. with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.